I'd like to welcome everybody to the class for Parshas Vayishlach in 5767. In Parshas Vayishlach, we have a few conversations between people and Hashem. That is our theme this year, conversations with Hashem. In the beginning, Yaakov speaks to Hashem in a form of a prayer. It sounds like Yaakov is afraid, because he is returning from his sojourn for 20 years with his uncle Lavan. Lavan is the brother of Rivka, his mother. He comes back with great wealth, with a large family. He's been blessed with so far 11 sons and his daughter Dina, from his two wives, Leah and Rachel, and his two handmaidens, Bilhah and Zilpah. But he is afraid because he's going to be encountering Esav, his brother, who wanted to kill him 20 years earlier when Yaakov had received the blessings from his father Yitzchak rather than Esav. And so he sounds very afraid. And his words to Hashem are, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. Please save me from my brother, from Esav. Ki yarei anochi oso. Because I fear him. Pen yavo vihikani aim albanim. I fear lest he come and strike me down, mother and children. We don't find a response to that prayer. Hashem does not say, yes, Yaakov, I will protect you. But I do believe that Hashem does respond to his prayer in an incident which follows not too far after. That is the incident with the wrestling match, if you will, between Yaakov and the man. And that's just on the very next page. The prayer that we just read was chapter 32, verse 12, and the wrestling match, chapter 32, verse 25. Vayivaser Yaakov levado. Yaakov was left alone. This is on his trip coming back to Eretz Canaan, to the land of Canaan, Israel. He's left alone. Vayeyavek ish imo ad alos hashachar. And a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. No mention about who the man is. Our tradition teaches us that it was not really a man. It wasn't a human. It was really an angel dressed like a man. Our sages teach us that this angel was really the guardian angel of Esav. I'll read to you just a footnote, a short comment from the Art Scroll footnote. The rabbis explained that this man was the guardian angel of Esav, Rashi quotes that, in the guise of a man. The sages teach that every nation has a heavenly power, an angel that guides its destiny on earth and acts as an intermediary between the nation and God. So he was afraid of Esav, and now he's actually wrestling with Esav, Esav's angel. And what happens in that match? Vayar ki lo yacholo. The angel sees that he cannot defeat Yaakov. Vayiga bechafirecho, however, he was able to strike Yaakov on his hip. Vateka kafirech Yaakov. So Yaakov's hip socket became dislocated, behavkoimo, as they wrestled. But he wasn't able to overcome him. He wasn't able to throw him down. Vayomer shalcheni ki alo ashachar. Eventually, because he could not overcome him, the man, the angel, says, let me go, for dawn has broken. Vayomer lo ashalecha chaki im beirachtani. And Yaakov says, I will not let you go until you bless me. Vayomer elav ma shemecha. So the angel says, what is your name? Vayomer Yaakov. He says, Yaakov. Vayomer lo Yaakov yeomer od shimcha ki im Yisrael. And he said, Yaakov will no longer be called your name, rather Yisrael. Ki sarisa im elokim v'im anashim v'tuchal. For you have striven with the divine and with man and have overcome. Yisrael comes from the word sar, or master. Vayishal Yaakov. Vayomer hagido nashamecha. Yaakov says, I told you my name. What's your name? Vayomer lama zetish alishmi. And he says a very strange answer. Why are you asking my name? Vayivarecho sosham. And he blessed him. What do you mean, why did I ask your name? You asked my name. Why are you asking, why did I ask your name? Just being cordial here. Obviously, this is a very, very cryptic passage, a very deep idea, a wrestling match that goes all night. A lot of questions abound. For one, why does it say that you have striven and you have overcome? Really, Yaakov didn't overcome the angel. It doesn't say that Yaakov was able to knock the angel down either. It just sounded like it was a stalemate. So why don't they just call it a tie? Why does the angel say, you have overcome, you're the master? As if to say, you won the match. Why did Yaakov win the match any more than the angel? So this is very cryptic, it needs explanation. But I believe that we may find an answer, Hashem's response to Yaakov's prayer. Yaakov hasn't even met the real Esav yet, but I believe that Hashem is answering Yaakov's request for protection in this preview, if you will, for their encounter. In order to explain that more fully, let us just take a look at an excerpt of another conversation between Hashem and Yaakov, later in the Parsha after Yaakov returns to Israel. It has to do with Yaakov's many names. Chapter 35, verse 10. Vayomer lo Elokim, Hashem said to Yaakov, Shimcha Yaakov, your name heretofore is Yaakov, lo yikore shimcha od Yaakov ki im Yisrael yihye shemecha, will no longer be called Yaakov, rather Yisrael will be your name. Vayikra shemo Yisrael, and he called his name Yisrael. Vayomer lo Elokim, ani El Shaddai. From now on, I will say it with a change because it's God's name, Kel Shakai. I am Kel Shakai. Pray Urave. Be fruitful and multiply. And he blessed him. Hashem says to Yaakov, I am Kel Shakai. And he uses a name which is not the name we usually use, Hashem. What is the name Kel Shakai? And what is it about God's names in general? We know that different names of God refer to different attributes of God. There's only one God, but he has different midos, different quality traits. And Kel Shakai, according to different interpretations, but in the Art Scroll, it translates that signifies mercy. The word Shakai, Shaddai, comes from the word Dai, sufficiency. You know, in Hebrew, if somebody's doing something and you want them to stop, you say Dai. Enough. How about on Pesach? Dayenu. What does it mean, sufficient or enough? It signifies, depending on the context, that God has sufficient power to bless, for blessings are His, and He weighs and measures how much blessing one requires or deserves. Conversely, how much suffering one can bear without breaking under the strain. I was stopped on that and I said, what? Hashem is measuring how much suffering one can bear without breaking under the strain, as if Hashem is like sitting there with a calculator. You see Chaim Yankel over there? Let's see how much suffering I can give him, you know, before he breaks. What is the idea that God is measuring our suffering as if He wants to give us suffering? I can understand He wants to give us blessing. That we never question. We really should question that too. Why is Hashem blessing us? But why is Hashem giving us suffering until our breaking point? And aspect of this Kel Shakai name, we learn in the, I'm just jumping ahead to the Parsha of Va'era, the second Parsha of the book of Shemos, just for a brief cross-reference. Hashem spoke to Moshe and said to him, I am Hashem, and he uses the name Hashem, but I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as Kel Shakai. But with my name Hashem, I did not make myself known to them. Again, something about the patriarchs and Kel Shakai. And here, the Art Scroll repeats the idea of Hashem measuring and setting limits on successes and on suffering. And also, Hashem sets limits on creation by establishing the laws of nature. The limitations within the universe functions. He puts limitations. He puts things into a box. This is how the world is going to run. It's going to be into a system, to a pattern of laws of nature. The sun will always rise in the morning. It will always set in the evening. The gravitational pull will always be down. The rain will always fall this way, it won't fall that way. To the point that if anything unusual happens, it's a miracle. It's out of the ordinary. That's also part of Hashem setting limits. All of this needs to be explained. And we'll refer to the name Kel Shakai and its significance as we come back to our story. I think there's a very, very great principle that is under our fingers here. You know, in our classes, which I cherish very much, I try not to say things which are trivial or, of course, Torah is never trivial, but I try to delve with you into those issues which are most important and most fundamental, not only so that we have commentaries in our Chumash, but that we understand the principles of our Torah and the principles of Judaism. Because there are so many key things which, as basic as they are, they may elude us. There may be a principle of faith that we walk around every day and we're not even aware that this is even a thought, that it's even part of what we're supposed to be thinking of. In the past several weeks, since the beginning of the book, Bereishis, we've been talking about man's ultimate purpose to rectify the world, the creation, by eradicating ra, evil, and doing good. We've talked about that a lot. Sur me ra, stay away from evil. Asay tov, do good. Last week, we went to great lengths to talk about how that is the purpose of the exile. We talked about why Yaakov was sent into exile for 20 years, and why the Jewish people are subject to exile. Throughout our history, we've spent more time in exile than not in exile. And what is the purpose of that? And the purpose of that is, again, for us to rectify the world by conquering evil. The insight that we had last week is, how do we conquer evil? We conquer evil by standing up to it and not changing. Experiencing evil from those around us, but not changing ourselves, not compromising our principles, even though people around us may be compromising theirs. That is how we eradicate evil. But our understanding of evil is, in the classical sense, is the evil that man perpetrates. You know, murder, thievery, immorality. Man is capable of great evils. Dishonesty, falsehood, deception. That's what Yaakov had to face. He faced the deception of Laban, and he stood up to it, meaning he did not in any way compromise the principles of honesty and straightness. That's how he eradicated the evil. But there's a whole other different type of evil that exists in our world that has to be eradicated too. And this is a tricky one because we don't think of it as evil. I'm about to discuss with you a topic which is also a topic of good and evil, yet we don't consider it good and evil. We don't. And we have to. And I'm talking about the issue of trusting in God. It is one of the greatest mitzvahs to trust God. How many people think that if you trust God, you are on a high level and you are righteous? How many people feel that way? When I say trust God, I don't mean believe in God. Let me clarify what I mean. Trusting God is like you trust a person. Let's say, for example, in a marriage, what would be a very great source of erosion in that relationship if the two can't trust each other? If somebody breaches the trust, that's like a terrible sin, transgression, and if there's no trust, there cannot be a relationship. If you say you're going to do something, if you say that you're somewhere, I have to trust you. If I can't trust you, then we don't have a relationship. How many people think that one has to trust God to be a righteous person? How many people think that not to trust God is being an evil person? Nobody raised their hand. Nobody raised their hand, right? See, I was right. We don't think of it as evil. And forget about whether you're evil or not evil, but let's discuss, what does it mean to trust God? You know, the opposite of trusting God is what?
Not to trust.
So, what do I do if I don't trust God? And I'm not talking about being observant or not being observant. I'm talking about trusting Him. Feeling that I can rely upon Him. If I don't rely upon God, what am I doing? Relying upon myself. Maybe I'm relying upon other people. Maybe I'm relying upon some belief in some other force, some other power. You see, God made the world in a way where it's not easy to see that He is the source and the power. God made a world in which there are laws of nature. Laws of nature mean that He set up systems by which He powers things. I'll give you an example. There's a king, and it has a kingdom, and there's a subject in the kingdom. And the subject does something, some crime, and the king wants him to be killed, executed. The king doesn't go to the man's house and execute him. The king calls over his closest advisor, and he says, "This man has to be executed." And the advisor goes to the general of the royal army and says, "This man has to be executed." And the general goes to the captain, and the captain goes to the sergeant, and the sergeant goes to the executioner, who's this big thug. And the thug goes to the man's house, and he takes him and he executes him. Now, who executed this man?
The king.
The king. Now, the king was very, very far, was many steps away from this man. If the man would see the thug at his house, the executioner, would it make sense for the man to fall on his knees and say, "Please, my dear executioner, don't hurt me"? Would he have any chance of survival? The thug is not a compassionate man. He certainly doesn't have the power to go against the king's orders or to go against the sergeant's orders for that matter. He's just a go-between. He's just a messenger. If you want to ask for mercy, you've got to go to the king. Going to the thug is worthless. You're wasting your breath. Another example. I won the lottery. Did you hear? I won the lottery. Who gives me the money? The mailman, of course. The mailman comes to my mailbox and literally puts the check into my mailbox. I don't know if that's how they do it, but let's say they put it in the mail. So, what do I do? Oh, thank you, my dear mailman. Thank you so much. I give him a kiss. I give him a hug. It's so nice of you to choose me out of everybody in the whole city. The mailman says, "What? I don't know what you're talking about." But the mailman gave me the money. No, he didn't. He's just a messenger. That is how Hashem set up the world, with layers of messengers. Human beings are messengers for other human beings. If I have a job and my employer hands me my paycheck, do you know that for me to feel overly grateful to my employer, do you know that according to the Jewish sources, that's a lack of trust in God? Because then we have the illusion that it's because the employer likes me and because the employer has the money and the position that he has, that's why I got paid. And if I don't butter up my employer, maybe he won't want to pay me. That's a lack of trust in God. One more story. This is written in the book Chovos HaLevavos, The Duties of the Heart, about a pious individual who had a friend who was a beautiful and expert scribe. He would write Torahs and Tefillin and everything. And he was once visiting his friend, the scribe, and he says to the scribe, "How's your business? How's your livelihood coming along? How's the scribe business?" He says, "Thank God, my livelihood is good as long as my hand holds up." And the pious man says, sometime that day, the scribe had an accident and he lost his hand. Why? Because he put his trust in his hand. And the only time one of these messengers or one of these intermediary levels really has power, guess when?
God gives it.
No. Only when we
allow it.
Only if we ascribe power to that and we don't ascribe it back to God, then God says to us, "Oh, you trust in your hand? Okay. Let's see what happens. Trust in your hand. Oh, you trust in your boss? Let's see what happens." And God, so to speak, lets go of you and lets you depend on that which you are depending on, which really doesn't have power, and you learn your lesson. But if you trust in God, then God never falters. In other words, there is no other source of power in anything that happens in the world, good or bad, other than Hashem. Unless we give it power, and then Hashem throws us, so to speak, to that, and we will learn that it was a mistake, and we were really making ourselves vulnerable. This is a big struggle. Just as last week we said that we are here in order to stand up to evil. That's why we're here. That's why we're in exile, to stand up to the evil deeds and thoughts of man and to not change. Just as much, we are here to live in the world which God has made with His name, Kael Shakai. He set up laws of nature, and He has given us both blessings and suffering, and the purpose of that is to stand up to the test. Will we give power to the immediate, what we see in terms of the immediate step right before me? Will I say thank you to the mailman? Will I plead with the thug? Will I butter up my boss? Or will I look behind and say, what's the ultimate cause? That's why we're here. And that's why Hashem gives us tests, both blessings and suffering, without breaking us, because He's not here to make us fail, He's here to make us succeed, by testing us. So He knows exactly how much nature we can handle while we still believe in God. Every now and then He shows His hand. He shines through the cracks in the clouds, and He reminds us that He's there, so that we will remember and keep on track. He will never deliberately put us in a test that we will not be able to pass. But this is one of the main occupations of life, standing up to this test. And I believe that this was God's response to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu was encountering the thug, Esav. And as you and I would certainly react, he's afraid. Hatzileni na miyad ochi miyad Esav. Please save me from my brother, from Esav. Ki yare anochi oso, I'm afraid of him. Pen yavo vihikani, he's going to hurt me. I'm afraid of him. God, please help me. It's a good thing that he's turning to God, but he's still afraid of the thug. He's still attributing power to Esav. And Yaakov gets his answer when he starts to struggle. Now, there's one central idea that this is all based upon. Rav Gedalia Shor, who I quoted last week and the week before, he says that this idea of Yaakov remained alone alludes to this very, very high level of trust in God. When a person is alone with God, that means that he has come to the realization that only God can intervene. That's what it means. He's alone with God. He has removed all of the layers of trust, of reliance that people do. That's what it means. Yaakov was alone with God. That was the purpose of the wrestling match. In this wrestling match, Yaakov had to transform. When he was wrestling with this angel of Esav, he had to transform himself. His weapon, his strategy was concentrate, cling to God in my thoughts, try to remove the illusion that Esav really has power over me. Try to remember that Esav is just an angel who's just a messenger. Messengers, angels, don't have power. They were sent by God. Try to see beyond this angel and just think, being alone with God. And as he wavered, it was a struggle. Well, he got injured, perhaps, because he wavered between being really afraid of Esav and clinging to God, and he got that injury. But in the end, he stuck through it, and he became levado, completely at one with God. As the Torah says, Ein od milvado, there is nothing else other than him. Nothing else. Everything else is just a messenger. Everything else is just a facade, something that God employed in the creation of this world. And God can create and God can remove. And you know what it means when he asked the angel his name, and the angel said, "Why are you asking my name?" You know why he said that? Actually, Rabbi Feldman said this a number of years ago. He says, "I don't really have a name. I'm just an angel. I don't have any power. Why are you asking my name as if I'm some type of an independent source of power?" That's what he meant. And you have won. You don't have to knock me down like a real wrestling match. You don't have to knock me down to the ground. You just have to make it so that I can't defeat you. And then you have won. You have striven with man and with God. It's a wrestling match with people and with God. You have to decide, am I going to believe in people or am I going to believe in God? You have striven. You have developed the true vision, the clear vision that man is not a power, only God is a power. And that's the name Yisrael, is this attainment of this ultimate power of concentration, of understanding, of vision, that Ein Od Milvado, there is no other power than God. Just as we have to go through life and we have to always be aware of the evil that exists within people in terms of the morality and the selfishness and so forth, we also have to go through life and we have to be aware of this other struggle. And it is a struggle. And to go through life and not to realize that this is even an objective would be to be missing such an important principle. The objective that we have is to develop it. It's got to be realistic. It's got to be something that we can truly believe in. Developing trust in God is very personal. It's very incremental. You can't just fake it and say, "I trust only in God." You can't do that unless you really believe it. We have to be involved in the order of nature. It is a mitzvah to go to work. It is a mitzvah to plant the soil and to till the soil. We're not allowed to just sit back and say, "God, pour down the money." You're not allowed to do that because that is not the way the world was created. The world was created with this die. This is how it has to be. There is an order to nature, but we have to do that as an exercising ground to develop bitachon. And at the end of our sojourn on earth, we have to be able to say, "I have struggled with this issue, and I have come to a greater realization that God is my strength. God is the reason behind the good. God is the reason behind the bad. And if I have a problem, I know where I have to turn, and I know I have to clear up my vision in that area." That is a major point of living here. And that is the two parshios here. Yaakov Avinu is our Bechir, our great forefather who has taken all of the attributes of Avraham and Yitzchak. He is the embodiment of the Jewish people. And in two parshios, he has taught us how we have to stand up to the evil of men. And he has taught us in this parsha how we have to struggle with this concept of bitachon and strive to be worthy of the name Yisrael, where we can develop the clear vision, Ein Od Milvado, there is none other than God. And we say this every day, that's the truth. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. What does that mean? Hashem Echad. Hashem is the one and only. The one and only source, the one and only power. It's a lifelong thing. Every day we say it, every day we try to live it more and more.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.